Will of Stratford.
To be or not to be, that is the question.
What, in a name, that which we call a rose, by any other name would smell as sweet?
Alas, poor Yorick. I knew him, for sure.
It is a tale told by an idiot, full of sound and fury, signifying nothing.
The quality of mercy is not strange. It droppeth as a gentle rain from heaven.
All the world a stage, and all the men and women merely players.
Ladies and gentlemen, this month all the world is observing the 373rd birthday of the greatest playwright of all time. To tell you the name of this playwright is not necessary. But is it possible that the man himself is sometimes lost behind the greatness of his name? The National Broadcasting Company brings you an original dramatic vignette by Bosley Crowther, showing the playwright as a living man set in his own time.
The year is 1584. And we are in England, the England of Queen Elizabeth, a land which is teeming with new life, new hope, new energies. In a smiling village on the River Avon, hard by the Forest of Arden, is a thatch-roofed cottage where lives...
Oh, a plague upon these vexing household tasks. Methinks I was a fool to marry Will, him forever doing naught save read in books and scribble lines. Oh, good evening, Mistress Quincy. Sit you down.
With pleasure, Anne. Oh, my feet are sorely tried.
From chasing gossip at the inn, I trow. Oh. And did you see my Will there?
Will? Not he. Nor in the tap room, nor the yard.
Oh, that fellow has me at the wit's end. He stays away from home and never works.
Aye. My husband saw him last Bennet. Just wandering in the Forest of Arden, dreaming.
A very lout he is. Two nights agone I found him at the inn, talking and spouting high-flown words with a company of actors that play in the yard there.
The Earl of Leicester's men, they are.
Aye.
We saw them yesternoon play Damon and Pythias.
Oh, it was frightful cruel. There broke my heart.
Plague take their evil mummery. It has my Will all dreamy, thinking he might be one of them.
Ah, well, tis no use fretting more, Anne. The Earl's men left from Stratford but this noon.
I saw them go, with their masks and robes and livery all stowed on donkeys.
Oh, praise thee, and may they never come this way again. Hark, what sound is that?
Yes?
Look through the window there.
There's a man running toward the house. Tis Will.
Why, Will, what means this haste?
Oh, go, woman, fetch forth me boots, me cape, me jerkin.
But, Will, those are your finest.
Make no delay, I must be gone from here.
But, Will...
Go, fetch.
What is it, Will?
Look, Mistress Quincy, look at me, a knave, an arrant stupid fellow. I was but now caught poaching on the lands of the great Sir Thomas Lucy.
Poaching?
Aye, to snare a bit of game for noble feasting. I have a frame which must be richly fed.
But poaching? That's wicked.
Ah, 'tis wicked to be caught and punished for it, but I shan't be. There's game enough in this wide world for all, and fair game, too. I'll hunt henceforth on somewhat broader ground.
Will you go soldiering, or ship away in the far Indies?
Eh, I know not yet, but where is Anne? Oh, there you are.
Here are your clothes, Will. And what's all the talk of going?
It is true.
But where?
Away.
But why?
Oh, peace, woman, peace. You heckled me to death. Ask Mrs. Quincy's for a wise truth, therefore. Now, let me see. I must have books with me, my... Chronicles of Ancient Days, of course, and Mighty Montaigne. Yes, and Petrarch, too, and most of all, my Bible.
You're leaving me.
I'll be back someday. My father's purse will care for you till then.
Oh, it is cruel and heedless of you.
Oh, fie, and your love for me is dead. So let it be.
Will you not tell me where you'll go? Perchance I'll need you.
Where I'll go? Oh, who knows? But now that fortune sends me from a home, I'll try my wings as I've longed to do. Mayhap I'll join some troop of wandering players.
The Earl of Leicester's men went forth from Stratford today.
Today?
Aye.
I thought they stayed some time.
One said they'd been called to London.
Players. Oh, Mr. Squinty, thank you for that news. I'll after them and offer myself there.
You'd be an actor then, with rogues and godless wastrels.
They are the instruments which nature shaped to play the mightiest harmonies of the human soul.
Some more of your fine words. You're a fool.
Oh, proper parting. Goodbye, Anne.
All right. Go. And good riddance, too. You always were a worthless fellow.
Farewell.
Oh, he has gone to London Town.
To London Town? To perdition? Mark me, Mistress Quincy. No good can ever come of Will Shakespeare.
And so to London young Will Shakespeare goes, a London of merchants and craftsmen, made colorful by the constant flow of sailors, swashbuckling adventurers, and explorers home from the seven seas. Into its newly built theaters and smoky, cheerful taverns throng this lusty crowd, thirsting for life and gaiety.
Come, Robert Green, and have a pot of ale.
Aye, that I'll do, Dick Burbage, to wash my troubles down.
What troubles, friend?
Faith, I'm out of sorts with all the world. You actors have been slaughtering my plays of late, and thus my reputation has suffered with the mob.
We do our best with what you give us, sir. But by our lady, methinks the universities have put too much rhetoric in you wits.
We take our models from the ancient Greeks.
Aye, that you do. Your plays, they smell of Ovid. They talk too much of Proserpina and Jupiter. But alas, they don't play well.
Ah.
No. Take this lad, Will Shakespeare.
Speak not the pestilent fellow's name to me.
Oh, you like him not.
I like him worse than not. A writer of plays, does he think himself? A sniveling actor he is. Why, not such a long time passed when first he came to London, he was holding horses outside the theater for farthing.
Now he has given us some right fine plays.
He is an upstart crow, beautified with borrowed feathers, that with his tiger's heart, wrapped in a player's hide, supposes he is as well able to bombast out a blank verse as the best of us.
Faith, you do show a deep-set jealousy.
He steals his plots from others and rewrites. There's no art in that.
He doesn't write for art. He writes to please. And since he does it well, why, what's the difference for a little thieving? Oh, but here he comes now. Oh, Will Shakespeare! Draw up, my boy, and have a pot with us.
God rest you, Dick, I will.
Round the mail here. Oh! And now, my hearty, versifying friend, where have you been? We've not seen you for days.
Where would I be? At work? At work on what? Why, a new play, naturally.
Another of your paltry plots, no doubt.
Oh, that judgment, Robert Green, is not for me to pass. You and the other wits may do so soon enough.
What is it about this time?
King Richard II.
Aye. Him that the suppose?
That is the one. The king who trod a primrose path until he saw too late the ruin to which it led.
Not like our good Queen Bess.
God save our good Queen Bess. She makes England great.
Come, Will. Give us a speech from your new play. Ho, gather round. Will Shakespeare's going to spout.
Oh, but Dick, it is not ready yet.
What matter that? A speech.
Speak, lad. I'm a sailor man. Captain in the fleet of Francis Drake. Late come home from threshing Spain's armada. Blow us a gale of your newfangled verse.
Yes, Master Shakespeare, and I'm home from trading with the Dutch. Let's have a swatch of your new English weed.
Rise, Will, and let us hear your best.
List then, you men of England, and hear these lines, which I have writ for John of Gaunt, to speak about the land we all do love. This royal throne of kings, this sceptred isle, this earth of majesty, this seat of Mars, this other Eden, demi-paradise, This fortress built by nature for herself against infection and the hand of war. This happy breed of men. This little world. This precious stone set in the silver sea, which serves it in the office of a wall, or as a moat defensive to a house against the envy of less happier lands. This blessed plot. This earth. This realm. This England.
And thus is William Shakespeare, before the age of 30, established as one of the finest dramatists of the Elizabethan era. And great he is, too. For in richest verse, which has come singing down the years, he reflects by glorious images the spirit of his time.
Here, lass, I'll have an apple to munch on the, before the play. Ah, nice red apple, too. We hope the play's as fair.
It's Master Shakespeare's latest, sir. He calls it A Midsummer Night's Dream.
Then 'tis a paradox, for Master Will is not a one to put us all to sleep. here's tuppence for the pit.
I pass the groundling in.
Shove over there and let a fellow sit.
Oh, shove over, is it? Why, this broad beam lass here is taking all the seats.
Here you, I'll teach you to make sport and bitty miles.
There's a lusty wallop on good firm English flesh. But leave off the wrangling, friend. Shh, the play's begun. Oh. And look, first come the clown. Is all our company here?
You were best to call them generally, according to the script.
Here is the scroll of every man's name which is thought fit to play in our interlude.
First, good Peter Quince, say what the play treats on.
Mary, our play is the most lamentable comedy and the most cruel death of Pyramus and Thisbe.
A very good piece of work. Now, good Peter Quince, call forth your actors.
Answer as I call you. Nick Bottom, the weaver.
Ready? Name what part I'm for.
You were set down for Pyramus.
What is Pyramus? A lover or a tyrant?
A lover that kills himself most gallantly for love.
That lasts some tears in the true performing of it. If I do it, let the audience look to their eyes. Yet my chief humor is for a tyrant. I could play Hercules rarely, or a part to tear at.
Francis Flute, the bellows mender.
Yeah, Peter Quince.
A Flute, you must take Thisbe on you.
What is Thisbe? A wandering knight?
It is the lady that Pyramus must love.
Nay, faith, let me not play a woman. I have a beard. Coming. Aye, that I have too, looky.
well, you shall play it in a mask. Now, Robert Starveling, the tailor.
Here, Peter Quince.
You must play Thisbe's mother.
Tom Snout, the tinker.
Now here, fellow, hold my horse. This is the Globe Theater?
Aye, sir, it is.
Is my Lord Robert Earl within?
He sits in stall 11.
Show me to him.
But, sir, I dare not do so. This is the first performance of Master William Shakespeare's newest play, The Merchant of Venice. I cannot...
Show me to him. I have most important news.
Aye, sir.
Are you acquainted with the difference that holds this present question in the court?
I am informed truly in the court.
Lord Robert, will you step without the stall?
So, Giles, you've come... What has the queen decided?
Elizabeth, God save her, sir. has ruled that since you have been loyal to the state and served her well, your debt is herewith cancelled. You are forgiven.
Praise God and good Queen Bess. Oh, here, help me to put you. My knees are weak from joy.
The quality of mercy is not strange. It droppeth as a gentle rain from heaven upon the place beneath. It is twice blessed. It blesseth him that gives and him that takes. 'Tis mightiest in the mightiest. It becomes the throned monarch better than his crown. His scepter shows the force of temporal power, the attribute to awe and majesty, wherein doth fit the dread and fear of kings. He is above this sceptred sway. It is enthroned in the hearts of kings. It is an attribute to God himself, and earthly power doth then show like a god, for mercy.
Most late for the play, my love.
Of course, dear one. We made haste slowly hither.
Oh, but thought we fairly flew. But here, just one more kiss before we step into the stall.
Oh, why, Christopher, you are a pressing lover. There. Now let us sit and hear the play quite proper.
How can I hear with you so close beside me?
Listen to the play.
How sweet the moonlight sleeps upon this bank. Here will we sit and let the sounds of music creep in our ears. Soft stillness in the night become the touches of sweet harmony. Sit, Jessica. Look how the floor of heaven is thick inlaid with patines of bright gold. There's not the smallest orb which thou beholdest, but in his motion like an angel sings, still choiring to the young-eyed cherubim. Such harmony is in immortal souls. But whilst this muddy vesture of decay doth closely close it in, we cannot hear.
I am never merry when I hear sweet music.
The reason is your spirits are attentive. The man that hath no music in himself, nor is not moved with concord of sweet sounds, is fit for treason, stratagems, and spoils. The motions of his spirit are dull as night, and his affections dark as Oedipus. Let no such man be trusted. Mark the music.
A man of the people, Will Shakespeare, and also, in spite of his modesty, a favorite of Elizabeth's worldly court.
And how does Milord this evening?
The rose sits fair in Lady Sylvia's cheek.
Yes, Milord. Have you seen the Queen?
She has slipped from the revels and is walking upon the terrace with Master Shakespeare. Let no one know.
So be it.
Methinks, Your Majesty, that our English nightingales sing sweet round Windsor Castle.
I find their music soothing, Master Shakespeare. You smile. Just think it odd I should be charmed by birdsong? I, who am thought to have a heart of ice?
Not so, Your Majesty. I smile with understanding. Why, you have but now commanded me...
Nay, not commanded.
Requested, then.
that I should write a play for you in which our old friend Falstaff falls in love is not that proof of tenderness.
Aye, sir. The thought but came to me that poor John deserved a warming passion in old age. You see, I too grow old.
We all grow old, Your Majesty.
Aye, that we do. And pass away. But tell me, what will your new play be?
Let's think. A comedy, it must be that. By Jove, I have it. The scene will be here in the town of Windsor, with all its jolly dames and good sound folk. How sayest, Your Majesty, we call it The Merry Wives of Windsor?
A right fine title, sir. And this will be another of your splendid English plays.
Your Majesty flatters me.
Nay, Master Shakespeare, I rather think it is you who flatter me.
How means, Your Majesty?
We, you and I, are both children of a glorious age, sir. And down the ringing centuries of time, it will stand forth as such. I was born to rule in it and die. But you were born to capture with your pen the very heart and soul of all we are. However history speaks of me, I know that what you writ will justify my England. I have been great, perhaps, but you are greater. Because the lives of queens and humble folk are but figures in a passing pageant. You have given reason to the show.
With all his vivid mastery of words and high poetic fancies, Shakespeare is first and last a man of the theater. Life, for him, is fashioned directly upon a stage.
Come, come, come. There is no further time for dalliance. We must begin rehearsal.
Aye, Master Shakespeare. Gather round, ye actor men and boys. Our master Will has work for us to do.
All here. Now, I have written a fuller version of my play of Hamlet. Some parts I have cut down, others I've built up. Here are your scripts. Look through them and prepare to read. Who is he who plays Ophelia?
Camp was here, but now... There he is. Here, you lean shank boy. You must play Ophelia. Leave trifling with that dog and step up here.
Give me, master. But my rover here has followed me into the globe this morning.
The fair Ophelia hath a faithful friend. Peace, lad, peace. Here, take your script and let young rover play what part he will.
Oh, thank you, sir.
Dick Burbage, will you step aside?
I will. What is it?
Do you have news about how Her Majesty fares?
Her life is slipping fast, they say. Her days are numbered now.
Aye, so they are. So are all of ours. Well, let's to work. Are you prepared, men?
Aye, Master.
Let us begin, then, with the scene upon the lower stage. Scene in Polonius' house. Laertes and Ophelia are on stage. Ready? Laertes speaks.
My necessaries are embarked. Farewell. And, sister, as the winds give benefit and convoy is assistant, do not sleep, but let me hear from you.
Do you doubt that?
For Hamlet and the trifling of his favor, hold it a fashion and a toy in blood, a violet in the youth of primy nature.
Oh, stop. That last was pure as bombast. Let's have it again.
A violet in the youth of primy nature.
No, this way. A violet in the youth of primy nature.
A violet in the youth of primy nature.
No, speak the speech, I pray you, as I pronounced it to you, trippingly on the tongue. But if you mouth it as you do, I had as lief the town crier spoke my lines. Nor do not saw the air too much with your hand, thus, but use all gently. For in the very torrent, tempest, and as I may say, whirlwind of your passion, you must acquire and beget a temperance that may give it smoothness. Oh, it offends me to the soul to hear a robustious, periwig-pated fellow tear a passion to tatters, to very rags, to split the ears of the groundlings, who for the most part are capable of nothing but inexplicable dumb shows and noise. I would have such a fellow whipped for ordering termagant. It out-Herods Herod. Pray you avoid it. Be not too tame, neither, but let your own discretion be your tutor. Suit the action to the word to the action, with this special observance, that you o'erstep not the modesty of nature. For anything so overdone is from the purpose of playing, whose end both at the first and now was and is to hold as 'twere the mirror up to nature, to show virtue her own feature, scorn her own image, and the very age and body of the time his form and pressure.
But Will, that speech was eloquent.
I'm glad you think so, Dick. You will find it all written down for Hamlet himself to speak in this new version of the play. Now let's get back to work. Begin at the beginning of
Masters, what prepare you? Prepare your ears for violent assault. Queen Elizabeth is dead.
Elizabeth? Dead? Did you hear that, Will?
Aye. And thus does our age draw to its close. Tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow creeps in this petty pace from day to day. The last syllable of recorded time. And all our yesterdays have lighted fools the way to dusty death. Out, out, brief candle. Life's but a walking shadow. A poor player that struts and frets his hour upon the stage and then is heard no more. 'Tis a tale told by an idiot, full of sound and fury, signifying nothing.
Those are the most tragic words I've ever heard you speak, Will.
You must help me to remember them, Dick. I'll use them someday in a play.
Shakespeare, all the world was a stage, and all the men and women merely players.
Ladies and gentlemen, you have heard a special dramatic presentation based on the life and times of William Shakespeare, whose 373rd anniversary is being celebrated throughout the world this month. This original dramatic vignette of Shakespeare's time was written especially for radio by Bosley Crowther. Those heard in tonight's performance were Alfred Shirley, Burford Hampton, Harold West, Eustace Wyatt, Charles Webster, Alice Reinhardt, Florence Malone, Joan Warburton, James McCallion, Elsie May Gordon, Peter Donald, John McGovern, William Shelley, Richard Gordon, and Celia Babcock. Stratford has been a Blue Network presentation of the National Broadcasting Company, RCA Building, Radio City.